October 25th, 1989. I'm Bill Jones, and today I'm interviewing Lloyd Paulson, longtime businessman and the community leader in the community of Moorhead. And Lloyd, as usual in my interviews, I like to start off with just a brief bio sketch of who you are, where you got started, and what you've been doing as far as going to school and working.
Okay, my name again is Lloyd Paulson. I was born at Parker's Prairie, Minnesota, which is north of Alexandria, about 20 miles. On a farm. I was born August 28th, 1924. I'm the second of five children. One brother died in infancy. My father was a farmer. My father and mother were farmers, I should say. I went to rural school for 7 years in district number 50. And then the 8th through the 12th year, I went to high school at Parker's Prairie, Minnesota. I graduated in 1942, I guess. And like I tell my daughter, I was 11th in my class. That's a lot better than she was. But she comes back and says, well, how many were there? Well, let's we'll drop that one. But after I... when I was going to school, of course, extracurricular activities weren't a big thing at that time. We rode school bus, so we walked a half a mile to catch the bus, and on the way home, it dropped us off a mile from home, so we hustled home, and then we had to do chores and all the good things, so there wasn't any time for extracurricular activities then. And after... I finished high school. I worked for some beekeepers at Fergus Falls, the Sundberg Brothers, for about 2 years, and then Uncle Sam called me into the service on February 26, 1945, and I was in the service until December 1st, 1946. I spent about 16 months of that overseas in the Philippine Islands. I was very fortunate because when I was about to get on the boat to go overseas, they dropped the A-bomb so they, at the end of the war. So I was very fortunate there.
You were on the you were in the Army? Or
I was in the Army,
in the Army.
Mm-hmm. And I was in the headquarters outfit in Manila's where I ended up, and a lot of the boys are going home, and
somebody had to mind the store while that was happening.
We had to mind the store. When we were about to get on the boat, they told us all the troops that were less than halfway over would be coming back, and those that are halfway and more would be going over, and I went all the way. Then after I got back from the service, then the time I was going to school, there weren't school counselors or anything else, so I just assumed I was going to be a farmer. So I rented some land, and my brother and I, we used Dad's machinery, and we grain farmed and made enough for spending money. And then in the fall of 1948, in the wintertime, there wasn't much to do, so I came up to Fargo, and I worked in the Piggly Wiggly grocery store, delivering groceries and so forth for a few months, and I didn't enjoy that, and there was an ad in the hardware in the hardware store, Carlisle, Bristol. And so I applied there, and they hired me right away.
So this in Fargo now?
That was in Fargo,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's right next to where Royal Jewelers is where it was.
Oh, yeah.
So I went home, and I sold my interest in the tractor, I guess we had, to my brother, and I stayed on in Fargo. And I worked there for a couple of years, and I could see they weren't going anyplace, so Shields had an ad for a man, so I applied up there, and there was a couple others that applied, so one of the other boys got the job, and so I stayed on for a bit, and in a couple of weeks they called me, wanted to know if I was still interested, and so I went up there, and I started working there, and I think it was about May 10th, 1952. And
this was in what capacity? Sales. Sales.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Sales capacity. Mm-hmm.
Now, did Shields had several stores there, or just
at sale? That time they had the store there, and they also had one in Wheaton, Minnesota.
Oh yeah.
And then I want to just backtrack a little bit here. In 19, I got married September 2nd, 1951, to Beverly Gerhardson from Fergus Falls, then we have two children, Bob, who was born November 28, 1952, and Corla, who was born January 26, 1954. And Bob now is married, and he lives in Rapid City, South Dakota. His wife, Jane, there, and they have two children. And he's in the computer supply business. He has a little business of his own, and Jane, his wife, is a special ed teacher.
Mm-hmm.
My daughter, Corla, she's down at St. Paul, and she's the director of occupational therapy down there, and she's been in that field. And Bev, she's very interested and active in community affairs and things of that nature there.
Mm-hmm. So. Including the Heritage Commission, which is the sponsor of this project.
Right.
Oral History Project.
Right.
Okay, and so you started to work for Shields, and you stayed with them ever since, is that right, as far as your work career?
Yes, that was it. I started working with them, and I worked with them for, I think it was about 3 years, and then at that time they opened a store in Billings, Montana, so I went down to Wheaton to manage the store down there, which was a great eye-opener, because at that time there was no management training as such, and you learn what you did on the job, and I learned a lot in a hurry.
Forced feeding, huh?
Forced feeding, yes.
Yeah.
But
so you were there how long then?
I was there for 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
I was down there for 7 years. From February 6, 1955 to June of 1962 is when I came back to to Morehead. And I came back to Morehead because they bought out, we had a, Shields had a small store down right across from where the Highway Host is right now.
Oh yeah.
Where the Highway Host is right now. And then they bought out Red River Hardware, which they had a larger store, and they bought them out, and so then we had a larger store. Actually, it was a 25-foot store and a 20-foot store with two holes cut between it. So,
mm-hmm. Now, were you brought back to manage that store?
I was brought back
store?
To manage that store, yes.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. That was in 1962?
1962.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, so that was in the old downtown business section then, the pre-Morehead Center Mall times, huh?
That was pre-Morehead Center Mall.
Yeah.
That store was located about where the street runs north off from Center Avenue between the American Bank and the First National Bank drive up there.
Mm-hmm.
That's where it was located.
Mm-hmm.
Next to Cox Bakery and across the street from what was Wallworks at that time.
Yeah.
So it was.
Yeah.
And behind us was a lumber yard, Foss Lumber. And
it's amazing you start talking about things like that, and I can visualize that because, of course, I went to school here in the early 40s and have been back many times since. But anybody coming to the community now, they wouldn't have the vaguest notion.
No.
How it looked in those days, yeah. Well, and you stayed with, from then on, you stayed as manager of the Morehead store.
Yes, I did.
In retirement.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And obviously, that was not the site of the Shields store on Moorhead forever.
No, that's for sure. Shortly after I came, the urban renewal process was started and to rejuvenate downtown Moorhead. And it's the best thing that ever happened to Moorhead. Without that, we wouldn't have had a downtown Moorhead. We wouldn't have had a Moorhead as we see it today. Shields Hardware wouldn't be where it's at now. Maybe wouldn't even be in Moorhead.
So It was a transformation. There's no question about that. And one, it's very interesting to compare Moorhead with other cities where the downtown just kind of died, and the downtown didn't die here.
Right. Yeah.
So the urban renewal project then obviously had implications for you and your operation.
Yes, it did. I was through the urban renewal process. Of course, business were relocated and the mall was built. At that time, initially, we were going to. We had a store of about 5,000 square feet, and we were going to build a store in conjunction with Foss Drug, where the American Bank is located now. And we had our plans all drawn up, the blueprints for it and everything else, and the urban renewal people saw fit to let the bank have that area because they wanted it. And so we were going to have a 12,000 foot store, and Foss was going to have a similar size store there. So then in the process, we got bumped around, and we finally end up in the location where we are now, which is a very good location for us because we're closer to, actually closer to the Center Mall than we would have been the previous location. I think it's better for the whole downtown Moorhead, really. The thing about the location we have now, of course, is the fact is that we're built on railroad land.
Oh, really?
We own the building, but we're built on the railroad land.
How long a lease do you have?
Well, years ago they had a 99-year lease, but now the lease is 20 years. Initial lease is 20 years, and the lease payments are renewable every 5 years. So after 5 years, it could be upped, although we are on a percentage basis with the railroad, and they're very happy with the percentage they're getting, so they haven't upped the... But we do, I believe, have 2 5-year options beyond the 20 years, but after that, should they not see fit to renew the lease, or should we vacate the building, we would have to, according to the terms of the lease, tear down the building, put the land back into bare ground again. So, but we...
Not a very likely occurrence.
Not a very likely occurrence, but...
No.
But
railroad would be killing one golden goose.
Right. But besides the lease payment, of course, then we're obligated for all the taxes of the on the building and taxes on the land, plus a lot of other obligations. Their rent is net-net. They take that, and we pay all the expenses. So.
Interesting arrangement. And that you moved into that location when, then?
We moved into the new store on in September 1973.
Okay.
In that store, the old store was 5,000 square feet. This store is, I think it's 20,800 square feet on the main floor. There's a mezzanine with offices upstairs about 2,000 feet, and there's an 8,000-foot basement for receiving and storage down below it. So total-wise, it's about a 30,000-square-foot operation is what it is.
Mm-hmm. Now, you were involved in the design of this and the process of...
Yes, I was involved in it very much so. The initial plan, layout, and so forth was my responsibility, and we run it to a past committee and made changes as we saw fit afterwards, working with the architects and But I had a lot to do with it, which I enjoyed. I enjoy that type of thing. And it's worked out very well for us. The building is a pre-stressed concrete building, the first one, I believe, in this, one of the first ones in this area that was put up. As you go into the store, you'll notice, I think there's only four cement pillars that support the whole center part of the store.
Mm-hmm.
The pre-stressed parts were brought in from Grand Forks and assembled put together right on the spot.
Sure.
So it went up in a hurry. But the advantage of a pre-stressed building, a concrete building like this, is there are no posts in the center, so that it's easy to merchandise and work with the interior of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very cost effective too. The insurance rates on that type of building are the lowest you can get. So.
Mm-hmm. Now that is a one of how many stores that Shields has in Fargo Moorhead?
We have, that is the only store in Moorhead, and then we have three stores in Fargo.
Three in Fargo, yeah.
And at this time, the Shields organization has 16 stores.
Oh, is that right? So it's
all
within the Midwest?
They go as far as Great Falls, Montana, down to Sioux City, Iowa, down into Waterloo, Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
St. Cloud, Mankato, Sioux Falls, so forth like that. The latest store we opened was in Grand Forks, and that is a 30,000 square foot store, and it is all sporting goods. There's no hardware in there at all.
Well, that was what I was going to start talking about next. My memory of a hardware store is that you could go in and you could find lots of nuts and bolts and shovels and saws and nails and a few things like that. Hardware stores are a lot different now.
Yeah.
And why don't you just give us a little view of the kind of trends that you had to deal with as hardware stores changed their role within the merchandising community?
Well, years ago, of course, the hardware store was a place where people got all their everyday supplies around the home. When the farms were small, when the farmers had cattle and small equipment, horses, small tractors, and they were milking cows and raising pigs and chickens. They needed a lot of the things that you would find in a hardware store, anywhere from pails to nuts to bolts to manure forks and all the good things. But the farming operation has changed now with the big type of equipment, so that the things that they need for repairs and so forth, they have to go to the implement dealer for it. It's a specialty part. And so basically you're talking about hardware supplies more for the homeowner in the cities and the household things around the home. And like with our stores, the Shield stores, all the stores in our shopping centers now, we have gone strictly to sporting goods, because people don't go into a shopping center store to pick up anything that...
Some wood screws.
Wood screws and repairs, yeah. No, they're there for other things. But stores in Fargo, Moorhead, they are very, very well stocked in the basic hardwares, all the things you need, besides the paints and all the repairs and so forth. Lawnmowers, snowplows, things of that nature. So there is, and there's a good market for this yet. There's still a lot of people that do-it-yourselfers and that shop there. So,
so the Moorhead store was a comprehensive store.
Yes, the Moorhead store was and is a comprehensive store. It's there's a lot of hardware and a lot of sporting goods.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing with our South Fargo store and North Fargo store.
Now, during the process of transformation in the the transformation of the center of Morehead. Did the merchants, as a group, play a major role in this, or what was the dynamic behind this change? Were you players who called a lot of the shots, or were you simply waiting for the kind of guidance that some bureaucracy provided? Just what role did the merchant play in all this?
Well, the merchants were very, very much involved in the whole process. There was an urban renewal committee that that worked closely with the federal government and that, but the individual merchants and the people in the area were very much involved, and there was meetings weekly to determine what we felt should be done and how the businesses in the area would be best for them.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of people of the merchants who felt that we shouldn't do it. A lot of the people, merchants, could see the advantage of it. And
yeah, how did that get sorted out? Because you know, the nature of the change is very radical.
Right. Yeah.
Boy, Main Street just was totally transformed. And obviously, anytime you have radical change, you're going to have people who say, hey, wait a minute, I mean, this isn't my town anymore, and I want it to stay my town.
Right.
How did that get sorted out?
Well, the purpose of the urban renewal process, of course, was to rejuvenate the downtown. The buildings and the business that were down there were slowly getting older and in more disrepair, and it was impossible to really build a good quality business down there anymore. Therefore, your tax base was getting smaller all the time, and by putting in new businesses into new locations, doing better, of course, your tax base would support the change, and actually the additional tax money would pay for the cost of doing this. And a lot of the people felt, hey, we had this for 100 years or almost, it worked good then, why yeah. change it, see?
Yeah. What was the political process? I mean, did this go to a vote of the people? Did this go to a vote of the merchants? I mean, how did this happen? Were there merchants who wanted to hold out? And if that were the case, you know, to hold on mm-hmm. to their own site, and if that were the case, was there eminent domain or something like that that could force mm-hmm. them to?
I'm not real positive on the legal part of that, but it was by consensus of the majority of the businesses, and if somebody didn't want to go along with it, there was eminent domain, of course, and it was a federal program, and it was the aid of the federal government was requested, and
made it possible.
Made it possible for mm-hmm. that, and mm-hmm. they provided the money to buy up these businesses, and the people that were in business that didn't want to relocate, they were paid for their business, they were paid for their building. If they relocated, they were paid to a relocation expense.
Mm-hmm.
So they were fairly treated, mm-hmm. although some people felt not, but I think the majority of them were fairly treated.
And they, who decided what would be a proper relocation expense? Obviously, you couldn't just say to a merchant, whatever it costs you, we'll pay. Somebody had to make some decisions.
Well, the government had guidelines, and I think they had appraisers that came in and looked at the business and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Prior to urban renewal, of course, you had in the downtown area, we had the urban renewal area was from 8th Street to the river and from the railroad tracks north to the river.
Mm-hmm.
And in that area, we had some business that basically in the times then should not have been in the retail course part of the town. What I'm talking about is there was two car dealerships in there.
Yeah, Woolworths,
Kiefer's and
Walworks.
Walworks were in there.
Yeah.
Also, there was a lumber yard in there and some other businesses that it was their advantage actually to find location elsewhere.
Yeah,
you see.
Yeah, they were.
And in the process, of course, those businesses located outside of the urban renewal area, leaving room for the new center mall as we have it now and for larger businesses that located in there.
Mm-hmm. In the mm-hmm. You obviously, as a businessman, had a vested interest in the strength of the community. That's clearly true of any businessman who wants to be part of a strong community, and as a result, most business people do get involved in various community activities, some of them business-oriented, some of them not. I think it would be interesting for us to talk a little bit about your involvement there. Now, I suppose you were in the chamber and active in the chamber.
The Chamber of Commerce.
Chamber
yes.
of Commerce, mm-hmm. right. Did the chamber play a role during the course of all these developments?
I can't actually tell you what role the chamber played, but the chamber, of course, is a very important part of any business community. And to be specific of what the role they played, I'm not sure, but there was committees that were working with the urban renewal process that the chamber officers were very much involved in every meeting that there was.
Mm-hmm.
And providing guidance, providing committee leadership through this process, yes.
And I presume you've had a long-time membership in some service club?
The Kiwanis Service Club is the one that I've been mm-hmm. involved in mm-hmm. back since 1969, I guess. So we're talking mm-hmm. about 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
That's been a very interesting service club. You get to meet a different group of people from the community, and by working together, of course, you can accomplish things. You can provide a service to the community, to some of the youth in the community, and some of the projects and social concerns of the community can be dealt that way.
Right. How about the are there any other groups, community groups that you've been consistently involved with?
I've been involved with the Clay County Historical Society. I was involved with the building of the Yumcom Center,
mm-hmm.
Which was, I think, and I know, an asset to the city of Moorhead. And I was involved with that from day one. I was on the board of the Clay County Historical Society. I was treasurer of Clay County Historical Society. And the Clay County Historical Society, being part of the Yumcom Center, we were very deeply involved in that from the time that the ship was the plans are being to bring it back and building the center.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I worked on the plans for it. I worked on the fundraising for the project, the layout of parts of the center, particularly in the historical part of it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And are you still on the board there?
No, I was on there for 6 years, and that's the limit that you can serve.
Oh, yeah.
pass the job off to somebody else.
Right.
I was on the board of the Berquist Pioneer Cabin.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I belonged to the Good Shepherd Church and served on the board there for a bit.
Okay. The leadership in the city during much of the time that you were in business with the Shields Moorhead store. See, you had Dwayne Holberg during much of that time as mayor. Is that right? Who was mayor before he? For him.
Hmm. Ray Storrow?
Could be.
I don't remember.
Yeah. This kind of leads up to my question. When we talk about the transformation of Moorhead, clearly there had to be some political support there. You know, the consul and the mayor had to be supportive. And ultimately, electorate, I suppose, had an opportunity to say yes or no simply by electing someone who is favorably disposed or not electing them. I don't know. Were you conscious of a lot of leadership coming, number one, from City Hall, and number two, were you conscious of a lot of broad opinions trends one way or the other within the city when you were involved with this major?
As I recall, most of the leadership was from the business community down that was being affected in that area and the areas close to it. I don't recall any.
So you don't
any votes, citywide votes on the thing. I don't recall that.
Yeah, and
I don't think there was.
Yeah, we can talk about today, for example, there is a projected conference center and hotel, and that has become an issue with at least some of the races for city council and for the mayor. And I was wondering whether you could remember whether that became city center urban renewal, did that ever become an issue as far as
not that I can recall. No,
the political process really was fairly smooth, evidently. Is the electorate, the population was convinced that there needed to be a change, and
I believe so.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, that's interesting. Because it's interesting, the difference now, and I'm not quite sure I understand the difference now.
Well, it could have been then, too. We're talking about 20 years ago.
Sure, sure.
Well, longer than that, 25 years ago, so.
Yeah.
And I'm not a political person, so my interests are not in that area too much, so.
And yet, when we walked in, you handed me a brochure on behalf of Maury Lanning, candidate for mayor.
Right. Well, I tell you, I retired from Shields Hardware 10 years ago. I retired at the age of 55, which is, I'm very happy I could. And since that, of course, I've been involved in community things. There's always a need for volunteer work, so.
Right.
At the present time, I do also, on a part-time basis, work with the Chamber of Commerce on memberships, enlisting businesses around that have not joined and have not been told the whole story, and trying to encourage them to become part of the chamber.
And so that enables you to keep your finger in the business scene.
Keeps my finger in the business scene, and I like to get out and be part of the community. I always say that the community has done well for me, and this is a way I can pay them back for what they've done for me when I was in business, and to keep this community a viable one that people want to live in. And if you don't have a strong retail section of town, if you don't have a strong chamber of commerce, if you don't have strong colleges like we do have, which is very good, the town is going to start sliding. And we have to keep working for it, because mm-hmm. it's for the good of everybody that there's no perfect way to do these things, but it's give and take and just work at it. So,
what are some of your other post-retirement activities?
Well, of course, I drive Meals on Wheels. That's like I've done today. I deliver food pantry things. I get involved in a few fundraisers here and there.
I'm aware of is for your old hometown, which I think is fascinating. Why don't you say a few words about that?
Well, I have a lot of good friends down at Parkersbury, and my mother and dad were still living down there. Mother still is. My dad passed away about a year and a half ago. And a lot of people have come out of that community that have done real well, and I thought, well, maybe there's something I can do to help them so these kids can get a little better education out of there or be assured of an education. So I come up with the idea, which is similar to a takeoff of C-400 at Concordia, but the initial thrust was to get 100 people to pay $547 into a permanent fund that would use the interest only for scholarships.
Now, why the 547?
547 is a school district number.
Oh, okay.
So it tied in beautifully. It's a figure that's large enough so that 100 people at 547 would give us about $55,000. Well, mm-hmm. in 3 years, a little over 3 years now, we have 117 people that have made contributions, and we have, instead of the $55,000, which was kind of our initial goal, we have $146,000. Hmm. And this year we gave out $5,000 worth of interest for scholarships, and next year we should have about $12,000 in interest for scholarships.
Yeah, that's great. Who selects the recipients?
The recipients is selected by a committee that uses the guidelines of the Citizen Scholarship Foundation of America. They have a good set of... The interesting thing about this foundation is that 40% of the members and 65,000 of 146,000 came from outside the community. It's money that's coming back to help these kids, and it's from alumni who have left from businesses that do business in the community, and it's a permanent thing that will help these children. And another interesting side of a light to this thing is that there are about six other communities that have taken the same idea and started in their community, and some of them have done real well. Like in Perham, some lady left $140,000 to their foundation. In Parkersbury, one individual left $55,000 to the foundation. One individual left 15, and that mm-hmm. individual was not even from Parkersbury School District.
Mm-hmm.
But in a small community, there is no place where people can leave money to other than the churches.
Yeah.
So it's important that they do establish some type of foundation that people can leave money to if they will, because...
And the resources stay in the community. And
the resources stay in the community and help these children. The other thing about it, too, is that people from a smaller, students from a smaller community like this, for them to go to college, it's a bigger step than it is for somebody living in, say, Moorhead or Fargo, because they're leaving home for the first time to go away to college. Some have been there briefly on a short visit, but if you can give them the encouragement and the funds to make that first step, get through that first year, they're going to do well.
Mm-hmm.
And this will help them, and that's mm-hmm. that's where...
Yeah, I think it's a tremendous, tremendous idea, and I'm sure it gives you a lot of satisfaction.
It gives me a lot of satisfaction, right?
Yeah. The only problem is that you're not in a position to benefit from the scholarship now. It's your two generations back that are going to benefit from it now.
Well, yes and no. The thing is that I never did have a college education, and of course if I did, it would have made my work a lot easier for me. But now that I'm retired, this country is going to go on. The younger folks are the ones that have to carry on, so that I'm going to benefit because of if they do better and they keep this country on the way it should be going. Those of us that are reaching a retirement age or in retirement age, we're going to benefit because they're doing better. So
yeah, well, that's taking the long view, and that's what we need to do. I'm going to go back on the business scene just for one more shot at a couple things, because I, clearly I'm not an expert in business, and yet I find lots of things interesting there, and I think you have some insights. One of the things that's changed a great deal in the course of running any business, I expect, is governmental involvement. We have things like OSHA and EPA and workman's compensation and all kinds of things like that. Now, the trend, could you describe the degree of involvement of government and its impact in your particular experience on the business scene?
Well, government is very deeply involved in any business, retail business. Like you mentioned, OSHA, at the time we were building the store, there was a lot of requirements that had to be put in, or a number of requirements had to be put into it that added cost to the building. And some of them, of course, were for the good of the employees and so forth, but a lot of them were pipe dreams of the bureaucrats in Washington that added cost and weren't really necessary.
Like what?
Well, one example is that if you had so many employees, you had to have a room that if some guy gets sick that they could lay down in, and you had to have a cot in there. It had to be a separate room, and it had to be private room, and mm-hmm. where you couldn't have a cot in a lunch room or some other place that you lay down. It just added mm-hmm. cost to it.
And that was a requirement.
That was one of the requirements, yes. Mm-hmm. And there are other things too. As far as government involvement, you're talking about workmen's compensation. Of course, Minnesota is hit very hard on that, and all these costs of the government have to be passed on to the retail, to the customer. There's no question about it.
Mm-hmm.
Government, the state of Minnesota, of course, is a progressive state, but sometimes they take on things which should be handled by the federal government. And I'm talking about like our workman's compensation, the compensation that they pay is sometimes to the point where it discourages people from getting back to work.
Mm-hmm.
And our social programs are things that discourage people and get back to work, because if they can make somewhat as much money as they can to start on a job, that they'll say, well, why go to work? I can do that. Not realizing that if they went to work and done a good job, they could advance up in a short period of time, they'd be far better off than they were working, receiving social programs, you see.
If the a lot of these things, if they were federalized, of course, it would eliminate the differentials between states, and
right.
that's a problem.
It would standardize it, so that there'd be no advantage, and
mm-hmm.
and Morehead, of course, is losing a lot, or has lost a number of business, because North Dakota workman's compensation is less,
mm-hmm.
and therefore it's. Cost less to do business in North Dakota, therefore why not move across the river?
So yeah.
Particularly if they have a business that's a high risk workman's comp claim.
Retail is not hit quite so hard.
No, it isn't, no.
Yeah. Well, you've certainly had a successful operation there in that Chiel store. When Morehead Center Mall was kind of having its difficulties, I used to kid Fred Chiel. I said, how does it feel to have the only successful retail establishment in Morehead? And he kind of grinned and said, well, it isn't quite true. But it looks different now, doesn't it?
Yes.
I mean, there's a lot of successful establishments.
All right, Morehead has unique people. That they're very faithful to Morehead as far as shopping in Morehead and doing business here.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of those would rather shop in Morehead than going to, say, West Acres and Fargo.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a very loyal group of people, and therefore, if a store provides a service, provides the merchandise they need, people are going to be faithful, and our Morehead store has been a profitable store from
the start.
From the start, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Even in the year we moved and we were out of business for a couple months in the move, we still had a profitable year.
Is that right?
Profitable, so.
That was a real accomplishment. Yeah, right. Well, Lloyd, what I usually do when I wind up one of these interviews is say, all right, I've been asking the questions, and I'm sure that I missed a million things, and so I leave a kind of a open space here at the end for you to fill in any of the blanks that you'd like to. So be my guest. Are there some things that you think ought to be on that tape that we didn't cover?
Well, right offhand, I can't think of anything. I think we've got a great community here, there's no perfect way to do anything. Right now, we're in a race in our city council and our mayor, and I was at a meeting last night, and it's very interesting to listen to people, the number of people that are running for these, and how little they know about the operation of the city, and yet that they say that they should be the leader of the city, and it scares me. It scares me very much so that some of the answers you hear, and I feel that not necessarily, but the city is a big business. And somewhere along the line, I think that a business background gives you a little bit of an edge in handling this type of business and the type of operations that you go on. And book learning is great, but if you've applied it and used it, I think that it gives you a little bit of an edge in that. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, we've covered a lot of topics, and I've enjoyed very much talking with you.
Well, thank you, Bill, and I hope the facts are right, and I know there's a lot more that could be said. But I enjoyed it, so.
Great.
Thank you.